Welcome, everyone, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are on a listen-only mode. If anyone would like to ask a question during the question-and-answer session of today's conference, you can press star one on your touch-tone phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you do have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. And now I would like to turn the meeting over to Katherine Pagan.
Welcome to Nutrition and Fitness After Transplantation, a People Like Us Coffee House Conversation Forum for recipients of all organs, brought to you by the National Kidney Foundation. I'm the Transplant Services Director, Katherine Pagan, and I'll be your moderator today. And we have a wonderful panel for you. We're going to start with Andrew Freeman, who is a kidney recipient. I'm going to let him tell you a little bit about his journey himself. We'll move then to Chris L. Wells, a physical therapist, professor at University of Maryland, exercise physiologist, National Kidney Foundation Transplant Chronicles editor, and I'm going to give you a website that anything we mention today you'll be able to find on it by just searching on it or clicking an obvious icon, www.kidney.org, and you can look at Transplant Chronicles, read some old editions if you want. And she also works a lot with heart and lung transplant patients and volunteers at the U.S. Transplant Games, the National Kidney Foundation U.S. Transplant Games. We'll finish up our talk with Janelle Gonier, a registered dietitian in nephrology from the Mayo Clinic Transplant Program in Rochester, Minnesota, with a nephrology specialty. She's on the executive committee of the Council of Renal Dietitians and is a speaker and a writer. Now, I'm very excited that I'm able to broadcast to you today from Boston, the American Transplant Congress, where 4,500 surgeons, physicians, scientists, researchers, nurses, pharmacists are all gathered internationally to talk about what's new in transplant and how to help transplant recipients keep their organs, which is what the National Kidney Foundation's In the Wait campaign is all about. We want to figure out how to get organs to every recipient who needs them when they need them, so candidates don't have to wait. Now, a number of the issues they're talking about are in sessions about nutrition. There's one that I particularly like called an overlooked topic, and another one, immune nutrition in transplant recipients. Recipients, like everybody, have to watch their diet and they have to exercise, but there are some special issues that recipients face. Now, we are going to end promptly at 7:30, so if you have a question, if you want, some people have given us tips that if you write it beforehand and read it, it's easier, or just be brief with it, and then you can always ask a second question. If we can't get to you, you'll continue this conversation on our message board, again at www.kidney.org, and we'll do our best to answer you and encourage others to answer you. We're hoping that this conversation we have today, besides being educational, will be empowering, because that's People Like Us' mission, is to empower transplant recipients. And you can join our Take Action Council, which will allow you to write to legislators and influence public policy, and you can look that up again online. So without further ado, it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you Andrew Freeman.
Thank you, Kathy. Good evening. My name is Andy Freeman, and I'm a kidney recipient living here in Atlanta, Georgia. In 2004, I learned that my kidneys had failed, most likely due to a prescription drug that I had been on. I had only been married for over a year and found this information very scary to me and to my wife. I spent 6 months on hemodialysis and almost 18 months on peritoneal dialysis while looking for a donor. I had several family members and friends that were tested to be a donor, but they were all not a match or had health issues that kept them from being eligible to donate. One potential donor was a match, but she needed to lose significant amounts of weight before my transplant team would even consider her. A stranger had heard about my need and contacted me after reading about my situation on a hockey fan message board. We had met maybe once in passing, but she wanted to give me and my wife the opportunity to have a family and a more normal life. She ended up being a perfect match, and a little over 4 months after we met, she gave me a kidney and that chance. Last summer, almost 2 years after my transplant, I looked at the bathroom scale one morning and realized that was the heaviest I had ever been in my life. I have never been slim or athletic, but I was really in shock at what the scale said I weighed that morning. I decided it was time to do something. I had been a member of various gyms throughout my life, but decided I needed something with more structure. I looked around and I found a fitness boot camp near my house that had good reviews, and I enrolled in it. For 4 months, and my page just went too far. For 4 months, I was up early Monday through Friday, running and doing various exercises at the crack of dawn. I felt better, I had more energy, and I lost weight. I lost 40 pounds. My doctors also had to readjust some of my medicines to lower levels. Last summer, my wife and I also had our first child. I want to be around to see him grow up. I'm glad that I have lost the weight and have the energy to keep up with him. Let me say this again. I'm not an athlete, nor have I ever been. I work full-time. I'm a father. I'm a husband to a wife that works full-time, and she goes to grad school. But I found a way to take time for myself and do some kind of physical activity several times a week. I've now ran 4 or 5K races so far, and this summer I'm running my very first 10K. Almost 3 years ago, someone gave me the chance at a second life, and I feel that it's my responsibility to do everything to make that gift last as long as I can. Our next speaker is Chris Wells, a physical therapist from the University of Maryland. Chris?
Thank you, Andy. I am a physical therapist, and what I want to talk to you about is how to get all you ready to exercise. First and foremost, you need to talk to your transplant team. Inform them of your intentions, of your goals, making sure that the beginning an exercise program, particularly if you've never started before or have been active before, is appropriate for you medically. Today's presentation is not intended to replace any assessment or an individualized exercise program. If you have a very long list of medical issues or you take a lot of medications, it's a good indication that you need an individualized assessment and program before beginning. Exercise is easy and almost everyone can participate, but it's important to design a program that's appropriate for you. First off, you need to know in that examination period, is your heart and blood pressure under control well? How healthy are you? Is any medications need to be adjusted? Many transplant recipients, regardless of the organ, have issues with hypertension. You should have your blood pressure checked not only at rest, but also during exercise to make sure that you're on the appropriate medications during that level of exertion. Also, patients have commonly issues with bone health and osteopenia or osteoporosis. Exercise is a perfect modality to improve your bone's health, but it needs to be regulated accordingly, particularly if you have osteoporosis issues and a history of fractures. Finally, I think it's very important for you to find a friend in support. Exercising alone is typically not very successful unless you're extremely motivated and dedicated. Find a friend, get yourself involved with somebody that you can find support and camaraderie to make the exercise sessions very fun and appropriate and something that you're willing to commit to. First off, I want to tell you that what are the American Heart recommendations for exercise for heart-healthy individuals? American Heart Association recommends at least 30 minutes of exercise at a moderate intensity at least 5 days a week. If you're trying to exercise because of weight loss, and we'll talk a little bit more about some differences, but for weight loss, you should be exercising 45 to 60 minutes at a low to moderate intensity 6 days a week. So how do we get started? First off, select an activity that is enjoyable to you and you're willing to participate in and keep exercising past the first week, because we know everyone's excited to exercise in that first week, and then it becomes a chore after that. That activity can be walking, it could be biking, it could be gardening, it could even be housework if you enjoy it. Secondly, the exercise should be involved with weight bearing, meaning that your feet actually contact the ground and you're absorbing the forces of the ground up through your bone structures in order to help in your bone health. So weight-bearing activities should be at least done 2 to 3 days a week to help support your bone health. This, again, could be walking or playing a sport, just not swimming. If you're a swimmer, you need to incorporate some other activities. The definition of exercise. So keep in mind, exercise means that you're doing above and beyond your daily routine. You could have a very physically labored job, have a busy activity and lifestyle like Andy does, and yet that's not exercise. It needs to be above and beyond what's demanded of you in a daily routine. Getting ready. Start with some sound equipment. Most of that just includes shoes. If you have appropriate shoes that are willing to support the activity that you're doing, and also fluid intake. You need to talk to your transplant team about how much fluid or if you are on any type of fluid restrictions. For athletes, I typically tell them that they need to take in 4 to 6 ounces of typically just water every 15 minutes, depending on the temperature and how intense they're working. The issue is do not get dehydrated, but you will need to talk to your transplant team if you're on any type of restrictions. I do not recommend consuming the sports drinks all by themselves. They should be diluted with water to avoid GI upset and cramping. Once you get started, you want to go through a warm-up period. The purpose of this is to start exercising at a slow intensity and slowly bring yourself up to a period where you're ready to exercise at that moderate level. This will allow your body to begin to sweat, to bring the blood flow to the muscles you're exercising, and elevate your blood pressure and heart rate so you can actually feel comfortable during the exercise. How intense should you exercise? You should exercise between light, what you would describe as light to moderate intensity. This gives you the ability to still talk, but you can't sing during the exercise. There are many subjective scales that you can use to help gauge yourself in exercise. You don't always necessarily need to be able to take your heart rate. There are rate of perceived exertion scales or shortness of breath scales that will allow you to regulate that and be able to be in tune with your body. The most common one is a scale of 0 to 10 that allows you to exercise, or 0 meaning no exercise and 10 meaning the most intense exercise you've ever done. It's recommended that you exercise somewhere between 2 and 4, which would be described as light to somewhat hard activity, on a scale of 0 to 10. This intensity can be adjusted based on your medical needs and how frequently you've been exercising or your history. How long should you exercise? Ideally, you want to build yourself up to at least 30 minutes of moderate exercise 5 days a week. If you're just getting started, that might be overwhelming. Start slow. Do 10 minutes, and then slowly build yourself up over the course of 12 weeks to that 30-minute period. It's okay if you need to take rest breaks. Take a 1 to 2 minute rest break if you need to, and then resume your activities. Once again, if you're exercising to try to maintain or lose weight, you need to increase that time to about 45 minutes to 60 minutes, but you can lower the intensity to light to moderate. Finally, when you're done, you need to cool down. The purpose of the cool down period is to bring your body once again back to the resting level. Allow your heart rate and blood pressure to come down slowly. Allow appropriate recovery for your muscles so you don't get sore and have any muscle strain issues. During that cool down, you should stretch muscles that feel tight as well. There are various different types of exercise. Exercise that I've been primarily talking about so far is called continuous or aerobic exercise. This really focuses on your cardiovascular health. Strength training or resistance training is also very important, particularly in the pre- or post-transplant phase of your life. Post-transplant, you're on many medications that have adverse effects on your bone and skeletal muscle. Exercise, and particularly strength training and resistance, will combat those adverse effects and improve your functional level in general. It's also important, strength training is also important for weight loss and weight management. Most individuals cannot maintain a weight loss or a lower body weight by just aerobic exercise alone. Strength training will build muscle, and for females it will not bulk your muscle, but it will tone muscles and increase your ability to burn calories. The final phase or type of exercise that's important is called muscle endurance training. These are short bursts of vigorous activities that go in duration of anywhere from 30 to 90 seconds. These activities are really done at the end when you're fully trained after 12 weeks of good training. These activities will allow you to do things like if you need to run up a flight of steps in the case of an emergency or you need to catch the phone, these activities will permit that type of high burst type of activities that you find yourself needing to do on a daily basis. finally, the activities should be activity specific. If you're training for the transplant games, where we have the National Kidney Foundation will be sponsoring the transplant games for 2010, I encourage you to go to the website to look it up. The transplant games are an incredible event that celebrates life and transplantation. You do not need to be an athlete to participate, and it's a wonderful experience to find support and get empowered by your experience of participating within the games. But if you're planning on trying to train for the games, whether you're planning on being a bowler and golf or do the walk race, doing activities that are activity specific to what you want to do will also decrease your risk of fatigue and injury and speed up your recovery for recovery periods during any of your events during the training, the games themselves. I hope this information has been informative. Once again, I would like to enforce that you need to have that conversation with your transplant coordinator and team to make sure that you're ready to exercise and exercise is a positive, fun experience for you. At this time, I'd like to turn the talk over to Nell, the nutritionist from the Mayo Clinic.
Thanks, Chris. Excuse me. Yes, my name is Janelle, and I'll focus on the nutritional aspects this evening. After receiving a new kidney, one would naturally look forward to freedom from the restricted diet required while waiting for transplant. Whether you are on a protein-controlled diet trying to preserve kidney function or a higher protein diet required for dialysis, there are just so many no-nos when you have to worry about how much sodium, potassium, calcium, phosphorus, and fluid you are consuming. With so many diet rules, everyone wants to know what they can eat, as nothing comes to mind after reading those long lists of foods to avoid. While this is going on, I'm quite certain that one dreams of the day when it will all go away. It doesn't help that no one around you understands why the thought of a tall glass of cold water or a wedge of cantaloupe excites you as much as a triple fudge brownie sundae would excite them. I'm here today to tell you that nutritional recommendations that you receive after transplant are fewer and more in sync with the rest of the world, but I'm also here to say that they also need to be taken just as seriously as those advised to you prior to transplant. The bottom line is that while you, again, will be able to enjoy foods rich in potassium and phosphorus, you must balance this with a heart-healthy diet that promotes a healthy body weight and good blood pressure control to prevent any nutrition-related problems that can occur after transplant. In other words, you will be following a diet that almost everyone around you should be following. There are, however, a few new twists for you to be aware of. There should be a heightened concern for food safety and also knowing about a few foods that must be avoided as they can cause problems with your new medication regimen required to prevent rejection of your new organ. First and foremost, after transplant, it is important to achieve and maintain a healthful body weight. Becoming overweight after a successful kidney transplant is a real possibility, as it happens to two-thirds of kidney recipients. This weight gain can be due to the liberal nature of the diet after transplant compared to the one followed previously. Also, you will likely have a much better appetite after transplant, leading to a higher food intake overall. Sometimes, prior to transplant, one can lose body weight and quite possibly muscle mass, in which case it would be ideal to gain back some weight to reestablish that healthy muscle. It is important to talk with your doctor and dietitian for guidance in this regard. A closely monitored program is necessary to allow for only the weight gain needed to reestablish lost muscle, and then it should be adjusted to maintain that healthy weight once it's achieved. There are a couple of key things that you should know to combat undesirable weight gain. First, be sure to weigh yourself often and routinely visit with your dietitian, who will give you strategies to control calories to help you maintain a good weight. Secondly, start exercising as soon as you are allowed to do so after transplant. This may be especially hard if you didn't feel well enough to exercise prior to your transplant, but Chris has given you lots of good advice to help get you started on the program that is right for you. Maintaining a healthy weight after transplant is key in helping you avoid the three nutrition-related health concerns that can develop. These concerns include high blood pressure that can harm your new kidney,
Secondly, heart disease related to either the effects of a high blood pressure or increased cholesterol levels. And thirdly, development of diabetes when body size increases beyond its insulin's ability and effectiveness to control blood sugar levels. To maintain a healthy weight, it is important to make healthful food choices. There are four basic principles that you will be advised on. First, eat at least 5 servings of fruits and vegetables each and every day. 1 serving is considered a half cup cooked or 1 cup raw. Eat the recommended amount of fiber. To do so, choosing foods with at least 2 to 3 grams of fiber per serving, keeping in mind that a daily goal is 20 to 25 grams of fiber per day. Your best sources of fiber are whole grain breads and cereals, brown rice, beans, nuts, fresh fruits, and vegetables. Eat or drink low-fat and fat-free milk and dairy products. And finally, choose as lean of meat cuts as you can, as well as fish and poultry. After transplant, sodium intake will continue to be a topic of conversation between you and your medical team. A no-added salt diet is typically recommended after transplant to prevent fluid retention and maintain healthy blood pressure. To achieve this goal, it is advised that you do not use the salt shaker and continue to limit foods very high in sodium, such as salty snack foods, packaged foods, canned soups, and processed meats. If you have a problem with fluid retention or your blood pressure starts to rise, you may need to limit your sodium intake further, much like you were advised prior to transplant. The amount and types of fat in your diet must be looked at closely as well. Fat is the most concentrated source of calories, so the amount of fat you eat should be limited to avoid excessive calorie intake that could lead to undesired weight gain. Concern over the type of fat you eat is also important to counter any cholesterol level that may start to rise after transplant. Be sure to choose heart-healthy fats whenever possible. These include olive oil, canola oil, and nuts in moderation. It is important to steer away from the unhealthy fats in processed meats, high-fat dairy products, and fried or fast foods. Also, check your food labels closely for hydrogenated oils and trans fats. These are not heart healthy and should be avoided whenever possible. Examples of food that may contain unhealthy fats are packaged baked goods, snack crackers, and fried foods. After transplant, fluid intake will also continue to be a topic of conversation. However, at this point, adequate fluid intake is essential to keep that new kidney working to its fullest potential. Before transplant, you may have been advised to limit your fluid intake and may actually find drinking more to be somewhat of a challenge, at least initially after transplant. Your doctor or nurse will tell you how much fluid you should drink to best satisfy your needs. It is important to remember, as Chris mentioned, that during exercise and when the weather is hot, you will need to consume more fluid to satisfy your needs. Water is the best beverage to drink. Drinks that have caffeine and or sugar should be used in moderation, as caffeine can increase your blood pressure and too much sugar could result in weight gain. Bone health continues to be concerning after transplant. To keep your bones healthy, you will need to eat more calcium than you did prior to transplant. Remember to choose skim milk and low-fat dairy products as your source of calcium. It is quite possible that you will need a calcium supplement in addition to the calcium you can achieve in your diet. If so, your doctor will recommend this for you. Getting enough exercise is just as important for your bones as getting enough calcium. Following those recommendations Chris gave to start exercise will help you maintain good bone health. As I mentioned earlier, there are concerns regarding food and drug interactions. Some foods may interact with the medications you take after transplant and thus are not allowed, and thus do not allow them to do their job properly. Most commonly, you will be advised to avoid grapefruit, grapefruit juice, pomegranate, and pomegranate juice. It is important to look for these hidden sources of juices that can be found in fruit smoothies, blended juice drinks, and soda. Also, be sure to ask your pharmacist if there are any other foods that may interact with your prescribed medication.
The final topic I will touch on today is that of food safety. Food safety is important for everyone, but it is especially important for those who have received a transplant. Improper handling of foods can lead to foodborne illness, commonly referred to as food poisoning, and can make you very ill. Foodborne illness can be serious, even fatal, so food safety must be part of your daily routine. Transplant patients are at particular risk due to the fact that the immunosuppressive medications you must take leave you more susceptible to illness. There are many types of bacteria that can cause foodborne illness, and most commonly we hear about E. coli, Listeria, and Salmonella, but there are many more. Foodborne illness can also occur when there is contamination of food at all points in the preparation process. So to avoid concerns in this regard, be sure to store food properly, keep a clean food preparation area, cook food properly, and ensure that whoever prepares food for you follows the same safety guidelines. I will give you a few key points to remember this evening. First, always wash your hands for at least 20 seconds with soap and water or use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer before preparing and eating food. Secondly, be sure to start with a clean and sanitized preparation area. Thirdly, wash all fruits and vegetables before eating them. Additionally, keep bacteria from spreading from one food to another by keeping raw meat, poultry, seafood, and eggs separate from each other and any other ready-to-eat foods. Be sure to drink and eat only milk and cheese products that have been pasteurized. Avoid foods that contain raw or undercooked eggs. Use packaged plain meats to make sandwiches. When you're eating deli meats, hot dogs, and mixed meats, such as salami, it's important to heat them to steaming before eating. Eat leftovers within 1 to 2 days and always reheating them properly. And check for expiration dates when you buy food. Remember, the guidelines we've talked about today are general for most people who have received a transplant. Every person, however, is unique, so before taking action on any of these suggestions I've made today, talk with your doctor and dietitian about exactly what you should be doing to maintain good health and kidney function. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Janelle and Andrew and Chris. That was a great background. And I think we can start with a discussion at this point. Operator, can you open the lines?
Thank you. At this time, if anyone would like to ask a question, you can press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. You will be prompted to record your name, so please do unmute your phone and record your name slowly and clearly when prompted, as that is required to introduce your question. If you do need to withdraw your request, you can press star 2. Once again, that is star 1 to ask a question and star 2 to withdraw the request. And it will be one moment while I see if we have any questions.
And while we're waiting, I'll say, Andrew and Chris, you both brought up really good points about having some event to work toward that can kind of get you excited or engaged in the exercise, the 5K and the U.S. transplant games. And operator, did you have someone?
Yes, we do have
okay.
A couple questions queued up. Our first one is from Alice Brown. Your line is now open.
Yes, I'd like to know why you can't go swimming for an exercise. And also, the other question I have is, you're supposed to steam your salami?
Two good questions. Does somebody want to address the swimming issue? This is something I've been in the transplant field about 25 years. And I've heard this come up throughout the years with different explanations, etc.
Well, this is Chris. I know there's been many issues, and each program differs about the instructions they give their transplant recipients. I think the important thing in regarding swimming is the fact of, do you have any skin problems or open wounds that may be a problem, that may be an opportunity for any type of bacteria or anything that's in the water that may cause you trouble? The other issue is depending on where the water is as far as your increased risk of sun exposure. and are you using the appropriate sunscreen? But as far as if those things are not an issue, in my experience, the transplant recipient can go swimming safely as long as the water is maintained properly. You certainly are at a little bit more risk swimming in a pond or a lake or the ocean because of the lack of control of bacteria and parasites. But in a controlled environment like a pool that's maintained properly, I think swimming can be a very safe activity as long as you do not have the issues of any skin or open sores.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
And this is Janelle. I will definitely tackle the salami question. The reason why we advise individuals to heat the mixed meats like hot dogs and salami is that there has been a lot of processing that has occurred. And if there has been any point in that processing that bacteria has been introduced, we would like to make sure that heating it would wipe out that bacteria. So that is the concern.
You just put it like a boil it or something?
You could boil it. You could even heat it in the microwave to steaming. That would be sufficient. There's less risk with like sliced whole meats like jerky and roast. That's why we kind of say the plain meats, because there's been minimal processing that has occurred. But yeah, with the mixed meats, we advise the heating to appropriate temperature.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome.
And our next question is from Eleanor Romero. Your line is now open.
Okay. One thing is I want to know is I bought some bottled water once, and it had fluoride in it, and it really nauseated me. I guess the fluoride or whatever. And it's best just to drink plain water out of the faucet.
Chris, I don't know if you have comments based on exercise, but from a hydration standpoint and nutrition, I mean, we would just like you to have any sort of water that you can tolerate.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, certainly a good tap water would be fine. And any bottled water should be fine, but certainly if you're sensitive to the fluoride, I would stay away from it.
And then another thing is my appetite has changed so much. I mean, it's like I used to love steaks and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And now I can't tolerate even looking at a steak. About the only thing I can eat is a tuna salad.
As far as getting protein?
Yeah.
Okay. And have you already received a transplant?
No.
Oh, okay.
I was close to getting one, and both donors weren't matched.
Oh, okay. And are you working with, are you on dialysis then? Or?
Yes,
okay.
I'm on dialysis.
Okay. And you're working with your dietitian, I hope, as
yes.
to some ideas for other protein sources, because
yes.
that's very important to stay healthy.
I know. Well, I'm actually drinking a protein drink.
Good.
That I make on my own, because my diet has completely changed. I don't even like eggs anymore, you know. If I boil an egg, I put it in tuna and make a salad with it. But that's about the only way I can eat an egg.
Well,
I used to love them.
Well, and most individuals do have taste changes, and maybe
uh-huh.
Andrew could comment on that. But by and large, after transplant, you usually have a very good appetite, and things taste good again, and usually
I
that's not a problem.
So. And I hope I get a transplant soon, but anyway. I have a very good social worker at my DCI center, and he's helping me a lot.
Good. Well, we're glad to hear that, and we thank you for your question. We'll certainly be thinking and wishing good thoughts to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to make a comment about that. If you notice
sure.
that your appetite is changing, it's very important to work with your registered dietitian to really look at your food log and your protein intake, because it's very difficult from a rehab standpoint to gain strength and endurance if you're not consuming enough calories. So So first and foremost, before beginning the program, whether you're pre-transplant or post-transplant and having complications, it's really critical to make sure that you're getting the appropriate nutrition so the effort that you do in rehabilitation and exercise is not, one, harmful to you, and two, that you're getting actually the best physiological benefit from the work and time that you're spending.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Our next question is from Melinda Amorosa. Your line is now open.
Hi. I have a few questions, but they're for, like, right after the transplant. My daughter's getting a transplant, and my other daughter is the donor. And they probably sound like silly questions, but things like how long is the recovery as far as being able to, I know that Vicky, who's the one that's the recipient, will be in the hospital 5 to 7 days, and I'm not sure after that how long. I know she'll be seen once a week. I don't know how long it takes the incision to close. I have questions like that, and I was wondering if there's any kind of support group in the suburbs. I know there's one in Philadelphia, which is where we live, but we live like 25 miles outside of Philadelphia. Vicky is not on dialysis. So I have questions concerning right after the surgery.
You know, you reminded me of something that Andrew's involved in, which is peer-to-peer support. And there may definitely ask your social worker if there is a group. And you can also look online, UNOS, United Network for Organ Sharing, which is the organization that manages the waiting list, has a list on their website, transplantliving.org, of support groups involved with transplantation. But ask a social worker. And then also, even if there's not a group, there may be a peer or somebody willing to give you support. And Andrew is part of a local group that does that in Atlanta, where he lives, and also as an executive member of the Transaction Council, is one of a group of about 12 people that reach out when we get a call at our 800 number, 800-622-9010, or someone emails us, someone like Andrew will respond to you.
Okay, so I would call 1-800-622-9010.
And you can ask for me, Catherine Paikin, and we can find someone for you to talk to.
That would really be a help, because my girls have given me questions that they have. Now, I know, you know, we talk to the surgeons and we talk to the doctors, but there's some things. I have one more question as far as the nutrition goes. My daughter, as I said, has not been on dialysis. She's been on, she does take vitamins. I think her health is pretty good, except for her kidney. Should she continue those vitamins? She takes them individually. She does not take a multiple. I don't like some of the things in multiple vitamins. She takes A through F, F being fish oil. And I know that most of them have been listed on the kidney side as being taken after transplant, but I was wondering if you knew that. And
well,
also for my daughter who's a donor.
Sure. Typically, in our program here, we do have individuals continue with their vitamins until such time that we believe their nutrition has been firmly reestablished and they're standing on their own. Then it becomes very individualized as to whether or not they should continue on individual vitamins, fish oil, etc. And that's
okay.
Something that we handle on an individual basis with the patient, physician, and dietitian all involved in that decision.
Okay.
So it's hard for me to give you a definite on that.
Right, because our nephrologist did say to ask the surgeons, I do know on the site, pretty much what she's taking is what they recommend.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the peer-to-peer, so if I call that 800 number and then look on transplantliving.org, you said...
Yes, they have a list of support groups, but you start with the social worker at the transplant center, and
okay.
Ask her, one, if she could recommend somebody that had a transplant at that particular center. And usually they do that, and they say that your children would like to talk to a living donor and a recipient. It would just help them through it. And often the transplant centers will have a group of recipients that they call that can fill that role, and she'll also know if there are local groups in the area.
Right, because I haven't been able to find anything, so that's I will call the social worker and ask her, and then I may call the 800 number that
right.
you gave me, too.
Right, you ask for me, and I'm in touch with people like Andrew who talk to other recipients to give them the benefit of their own experience. They can't give, of course, their experience may not be your daughter's experience, but it is something that you know that the person has been through it and has something very honest and heartfelt to share.
Yeah, and these are pretty common. I mean, like, you know, can you wear things that have a waist in them in the beginning? I mean, they're silly.
They're not really silly, and these are questions you can ask the transplant team, too.
Right.
But you might want to hear also from a recipient.
Exactly, yeah. I think they would, and I would. Okay, and your first name's Kathy, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
And our next question is from Darlene Fletcher. Your line is now open.
Hi. First of all, I just wanted to commend Andrew on his experience. My spot follows a little similar course. I've had my transplant for 11 years, and I've picked up about 60 pounds, but unlike Andrew, I didn't do anything about it. So now I'm suffering the consequences of it. As a result, though, I lost my kidney because of lupus, and lupus seemed to have attacked the new kidney. So now I'm in danger of losing the kidney. And I don't know where to begin because I'm not really under, I see my nephrologist every 3 months, but I'm not under a dietitian. I'm just kind of lost out in the middle of the ocean. As a result of the excess weight, and I believe that immunosuppressors, I have bone disease now, so I'm disabled, so I don't work, and I need to get into some sort of exercise regimen, dietary regimen, to lose some of this weight, because in the event that I do lose the kidney and have to go on dialysis again, I want to be in better shape, because I was a much younger woman, and I did dialysis well. But this time, I don't think I'll fare very well.
This is Chris. I think you find yourself in a very common situation, both whether this is your first transplant experience or a redo transplant, that, you know, and even just in the general population, weight has a tendency to sneak up on people. The place to start is actually talking to your transplant coordinator or your physician and talk to them about your intent and your needs. Once that's been happening, depending on your age, you may need to go through some exercise testing to make sure that they rule out any medical reason why you should not be exercising. And at that point, based on the complexity of your medical history that you've shared with us, I would recommend getting involved with a physical therapist that can look at you as a whole person, that can address the issues of your osteoporosis and the exercise. That will help maintain or improve your bone density, working with the physician about what medications may also assist, working with a registered dietitian to make sure that your nutrition is appropriate for a weight loss and medical management plan for you as you wait for a transplant. You also need to, you know, be kind to yourself, recognize that the weight didn't come on overnight. It's going to take lots of time for it to come off, and try to, you know, think of your goals as far as being as less than even, you know, even a quarter to a half a pound a week is an appropriate goal to lose weight and be able to maintain it effectively. So start with, you know, that medical screen, and then as far as finding a physical therapist in your area, you can go to www.APTA, as in the American Physical Therapy Association, .org, and I know you can actually, where they have up on the website, a place where you can click that says find a PT in your area. And you can actually search for a physical therapist in your area that's been registered and qualified. these people. And I would just start calling around. Also check with your transplant facilities to see if they actually have a particular therapist that they work with your program.
You know, I tried that last year, or maybe it was the year before. I had a physical therapist that came to my home, and this was through my Medicare. And they came twice, and they never showed up again.
Mm-hmm.
And they billed me for all of my PT services for the year. And so I am so leery of trying to contact another PT.
So you had probably home care services or home physical therapy. That focus is very different, and I'm sorry that you didn't have a positive experience. What I'm talking about is you would actually go to some outpatient facility.
Okay.
Most insurances will cover outpatient physical therapy services with a physician's referral.
Mm-hmm.
You may work with your transplant team as far as a letter of necessity or working with your insurance company if they're going to approve you for transplant services. Part of that approval needs to be rehabilitation, both pre and post. So working with your insurance company and a case manager that's assigned to you to help you kind of negotiate through the insurance complexities and the medical service. But I think it sounds like what you need is actually somebody to sit down with you from a therapist. Doesn't need to be you see that person, you know, 2 or 3 days a week, but it might be the sense that you see them intermittently to get you started on a program and then kind of guide you through it.
Okay, you know, I know that once you have your transplant, sometime after the transplant, I mean within the first maybe year, 2 or 3, you have access to transplant services. But by my having my transplant this far out, I didn't think those kind of services were available to me now.
The services are available to you at any time, regardless of your condition or your medical history. It's a matter of working through the complexity of your insurance company to figure out what they'll cover, what you need justification from your transplant coordinator or team from, and your physicians to get you the services that you need.
Right, and that insurance can be a government insurance like Medicare or one of the state Medicaid insurances, or it could be an employee or private insurance.
Okay. All right, well, thank you. I will start there.
Start with the transplant team and find out what services do they have already affiliated with their programs to get you started.
Okay.
And our next question is from Richard Vitalik. Your line is now open.
Yes, good evening. I have a couple questions for Janelle regarding food safety.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, Janelle, my wife has always cooked healthy for me. I've had my transplant for a little over 2 years now. And one of my questions is, we do go out and frequent restaurants occasionally. We don't make a big habit of it. But what about food safety at restaurants? Do they, how do you find out if they actually wash their fruits and vegetables and to be careful on what you do get, even though we do try to eat healthy at the restaurants as well?
Well, I would suggest that you start by just being aware of what they do. You can learn a lot by observing what they do around you, but basically just asking the questions too. Those are valid questions. I would hope that they would do that, but that may not be a guarantee. Sometimes after, you look at the salad bar, you get a sense for that too, how cleanly things can be. That would be one place that you could look. But I think if it's a reputable restaurant and you ask the right questions about that, I think you're probably pretty safe. To eat there, I would still be cautious of the things that may be obvious if you aren't sure about the dairy products and how well-cooked eggs may be. Those might be some things that I'd be more suspicious of because sometimes they may use more raw cheeses on gourmet things as an example. But again, it would matter asking the question to be sure on that.
Yeah, thank you. On that, one other question, I know you mentioned in your talk about certain kinds of things that you shouldn't avoid being on the transplant medications, like the grapefruit and pomegranate.
Mm-hmm.
Is that related to certain type of meds, like either Prograf or the Felcept, or depending on what you're on?
Exactly. Those are the medications that I'm referring to.
Okay, so that's all the immunosuppressants, basically, that would... you know, you'd want to avoid grapefruit, pomegranate.
Yes, that's a general recommendation. Yes. And, you know, depending on other types of medications that you may be on as well, because there may be cardiac, heart-related medications, blood pressure-related medications, medications to lower cholesterol. You know, that's why a good chat with your pharmacist is good, because there may be other things involved there. But the, you know, pomegranate and the grapefruit are specific to those medications for anti-rejection.
Right. Okay. So, well, make sure we avoid that. We haven't been eating too much of that, but that's one good thing to know to avoid. One other question I have in general for overall, I know the Medicare coverage for immunosuppressive drugs lasts for 3 years for someone who's not age eligible, and I know there's a bill currently in the works for that, and I haven't been able to get any status on that as to when that may come into effect.
Well, that's an excellent question, and if you, we'll just say the website again, www.kidney.org/takeaction, and we'll give you some background on that bill, and that's also part of the In the Weight program of the National Kidney Foundation, believing that if people have Medicare pay for their medications at 80% of their Part B for the rest of their lives, it will certainly help people keep their organs by making it easier to afford. And it has been introduced in Congress year after year after year. So to some people, well, why is this year any different than other years? But there is some excitement about it since the new administration is looking at health care reform. There seems to be momentum and feeling that some progress will be made. What I would like to ask you to do is to, for the newest update, is to really contact our public policy office in Washington, D.C. And again, you can get there through our website. Unfortunately, I don't have the latest to just tell you on the phone right now, but I know people do like updates as they can get them. And sometimes we'll post them on the website fairly quickly, and sometimes it may be better to just give a call.
Yeah, okay. I have followed up with Take Action, and I've written letters to our local representatives and everything, and basically get the same kind of answers back each time, like, just, you know, nothing specific's been done, and, you know, we'll look into it.
Okay. So there'll probably be a new report fairly soon, though these things do tend to move incrementally, but check with our Washington, D.C. office for the latest, or try to just keep at it steadily, and bit by bit we'll chip away and make a difference.
Yeah, I sure will. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for your support.
Sure. Yep.
Our next question is from Lisa Grabenbauer. Your line is now open.
Yeah, I was wondering, is there anything to help relieve, or anything you can do to help relieve the muscle soreness after exercise? I have gotten so weak. I was hospitalized for about 4 months with an infection, and I had to learn to walk, and I'm still using a walker, and I am working with a physical therapist twice a week in the pool, and then the other days working with elastic bands and things. But it seems like every muscle I seem to work, I hurt so bad the next day that, oh my gosh, I just can't stand it. So is it best to relax on those days, or is it best to push through the pain and stretch those muscles and keep working them?
Recognize that muscle soreness comes with exercise if you're getting any benefit from the exercise. So in your case, being the fact that you were sick and you're really learning how to walk and stand up again and regain your balance, your muscles are going to be sore because they're really quite deconditioned and weak.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is that if walking is still a challenge to you,
yes.
then the therapist should help you find an exercise that's less energy consuming or less stressful, like sitting down and using just a bicycle pedal to pedal,
mm-hmm.
or an interval program that doesn't take you to exhaustion. So you can gain the strength, be able to exercise a little longer, but not feel the soreness. That's one thing. Your TheraBands may be too much. Your soreness should last no more than about 48 hours.
Okay.
So if you have a session with a therapist on Monday and you're still really, really sore by Thursday, then you've really done too much. The other important thing is to make sure that you warm up.
Okay.
So once again, even before, if you're going to try to do, you know, walk as much as you can, you know, even to sit and march in place to get your muscles moving, to get those leg muscles going.
Mm-hmm.
And then stretching is very important. And finally, if in recovery, and it doesn't matter if you're training for a 10K like Andrew is doing, or you're learning to rewalk again, just stopping an exercise. So you do your activity and then you stop. If the muscles were fatigued and tired when you finish that exercise, you've actually built up acid in the muscle. And for you to just stop and sit on a sofa allows that lactic acid to kind of stay there. So it's actually better to return to some sort of cool down or recovery, that you're doing a little bit of something, very low level, to keep the blood circulating. And that should also help in your recovery.
Okay.
Finally, recognizing that the best thing when you're sore is to get off the couch and do something. A muscle that sits and isn't moved actually has more tendency to be sore longer than a muscle that would get up and exercise. So once again, if you've had your therapy session and you're really sore, the best thing is the next day, do something very light. That could be just sitting on your sofa and, you know, straightening your legs and marching in place, or riding a little bicycle with just using the pedals with no resistance, will make your recovery much faster and much more comfortable.
Okay. Then also, are there, I know that they want to stay clear of a lot of things. Say, I'm on dialysis. I did have a transplant of pancreas kidney 20 years ago, and I still have the pancreas, but I lost the kidney. So I'm on dialysis now. I know that vitamins and minerals and supplements and things are something they always kind of tell us to stay clear of, because we don't know for sure what's all in them. Lots of times they're not regulated by the FDA and stuff. But are there any kind of vitamins that you can take safely that are, you know, that the body will get rid of automatically?
Yeah, there are a number of vitamins that have been developed specifically for dialysis patients that provide the exact amount of nutrients that we know are needed for dialysis, because you kind of have your base vitamin needs, and realizing that some vitamins are removed during the dialysis procedure.
Mm-hmm.
So those two needs are packaged into one pill that are prescribed for you, and you should, you know, talk with your team to see what one they like to use in their dialysis unit.
Okay.
But there should be some readily available for you.
Yeah, they've got me on like a NephroCap.
Okay.
I'm taking that. But I just didn't know, like, well, when I had surgery, they had told me that the tissues, when he was trying to suture up the tissues, that they were broken down because of, I've been on steroids for such a length of time that it was difficult for him to suture up some of the tissues during surgery. I was wondering if there's anything that you can take to help rebuild some of that the steroids break down, those muscle tissues.
Wow, I'd really have you talk with your nephrologist about that specifically, but definitely the best way to reestablish healthy tissue is good, balanced nutrition, getting adequate calories and protein along with your NephroCap and regular vitamin recommendations. That will certainly get you a long way, but any specific questions, I would certainly refer you back to your nephrologist.
Okay.
About that.
Well, that's about it for me.
Thank you.
Okay, and our next question is from Joanne Corder. Your line is now open.
Yes, I am currently on dialysis, and I have been for about 2 years. But I don't know that I'm a candidate necessarily for a transplant, because of all the other medical problems. But my biggest problem is I live in a nursing home, and I have no control over my diet because they had me on, you know, like the renal diet for almost a year, and then they took me off of it through the nursing home.
Okay.
Is there anything that I can do personally, like if should I be taking supplements or, you know, any of that kind of thing? Because I'm limited with my physical stuff. I can walk some with a walker, but I usually use a wheelchair to get around.
Well, with respect to your nutrition, are you visiting monthly with your dialysis dietitian?
No.
Okay. I would.
I mean, I've tried, but, you know, they won't. They have to go through the dietitian over the nursing home.
Okay.
And they won't talk to my dietitian through dialysis.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
That's a hard one because you really need that open communication between your dialysis dietitian and, you know, either the nursing home dietitian or whoever their consulting dietitian might be, because they need to communicate your needs very specifically, because the dietitian at dialysis will be looking at all your nutritional parameters from a dialysis standpoint that they probably aren't even measuring in a nursing home situation normally.
Oh.
So that information really needs to be communicated back and forth. And, you know, maybe asking, you know, in a care conference that you have with the facility to see if they can start communicating with each other. Because otherwise, I don't know how they ascertain what they should be feeding you without that information.
I don't know. I know that, you know, my labs are coming back bad. They have been for a few months. And I've picked up about 20, 22 pounds over from Christmas until now.
Okay.
So, you know, it's like...
There have been past two conditions of participation for dialysis centers where they really is a focus on patients being able to get the care they need, such as nutritional services. And we actually have on our website some previous calls about these dialysis conditions of participation. And it might be worth asking about it at your dialysis center or learning about it so you can just be empowered to ask for this care you need. You need the dietitian at the dialysis center to really maybe assertively call the place where you're living and let them know what your needs are and coordinate care with that dietitian there.
Okay. The other thing to think about, how old are you?
I just turned 65 in November.
Perfect.
And I've been here 3 years. So.
Okay. Call or have a family member call your state Department of Aging.
Wait a minute.
So, call the Department of Aging for whatever state you live in.
Yeah.
And talk to them, because in many instances you can get a representative via the Department of Aging to serve as a representative to you as a conduit between the care you might need and issues that come up in institutions like a nursing home. So they'll come out and they'll assign you somebody. They can come out and talk to you. They can then investigate your needs from the dialysis center as well as the position of the nursing facility and try to help you. They work for you to help you sort out the best plan of care. But many states, all states have a Department of Aging, and many states have such support services to provide to people that are 65 and older. Those type of services to help sort things out, particularly if you're living in an institution like a skilled nursing facility.
Right. Okay. I'll try that route. See if that helps.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, there was my question was with the exercise. I find that, you know, I wear out very quickly. Is it better to just try to do, like you say, the armchair exercises, as opposed to the walking or the physical, you know, the real physical stuff?
Well, I think you need to start someplace and spread your activities out over the course of the day. Don't think you need to do everything all in the morning or in the afternoon.
Okay.
Walking is important because it's the most functional thing people do. It's got multiple benefits of just besides getting you from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get really tired by walking, you know, 40 feet, then, you know, walk 20 feet and then sit down and rest and then walk another 20 feet. So you're not walking to the maximum level you can walk before you're purely exhausted and can't do anymore. But then also incorporate some activities from the chair, just some basic calisthenics type of stuff that you can do from the chair or from just standing next to the chair or next to your bed. But
okay.
Start slow and spread things out over the course of the time, over time.
Okay.
And many nursing facilities also have some sort of joint type of programming for physical activity. It's usually supervised by a therapist. The therapist may not be there every day, but it's also you can talk to them as far as what you're trying to do, and also making sure that they're aware that you are waiting a transplant.
Well, I would love to be, but I don't know if I will qualify.
Okay. So if you're in that process of exploring that type of opportunity, then having that ability to say that these are the things I need to be able to do, can you help me beyond the little community exercise program that's going on within your facility? They might be able to also give you some extra guidance.
Okay. Is there a limit of age-wise for a transplant?
It's really not your physical age as much as your physical health.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you. Gave me some direction to try to go.
Great. Thank
okay,
you.
Good luck.
Quick question.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
And currently, at this time, I am showing no further questions. If anyone would like to queue up for a question, as a reminder, that is star 1.
I'm going to ask our speakers if they have any parting remarks. We can prepare to end. We'll want everybody to stay on the line and just for an extra minute to take the operator will walk you through a very quick poll so we can know how this call has impacted you and keep bringing you calls that serve the needs that you have. So we will ask you when we're done to stay on the line for one more minute with the operator. And meanwhile, I'm just going to ask our panelists for some parting thoughts. And if anybody queues up in the meantime, we can certainly take a question before we end.
And just so you know, we did have a couple of questions queue up whenever you want to take those.
Okay. We can move to that then.
Okay. The next question is Maurice Williams. Your line is now open.
Yes, ma'am. I was on the transplant list. Well, I'm still currently on the transplant list, and I turned down the kidneys that was offered to me. As a result of that, am I put, like, at the bottom of the list, or do I maintain my position, or how does that work?
Well, this is a good... there are people that do turn down the kidney when it's offered. That's certainly your right to do that. And if you communicate with the transplant center and they understand why you turned it down and know that you might want a future one, they usually keep your place on the list. But you want to talk to them so they really understand your thinking. Sometimes some people just aren't ready and they want to be made, quote, inactive for a while. And that's okay. You can be inactive so they don't have to call you, but are able to, when the organ comes, they want to place it as soon as possible. So the less people they have to call, the better. And you can be inactive until you're ready and not lose your place on the list. Like when you're ready, you go right back to it. So you really want to talk to the center about what's going through your mind at that time. And there may be a point, if you turn them down, if you're continually turning down, they may have that talk with you and say, listen, at this point we want to make you inactive because we don't think you're ready. Any of the other panelists have any insights about that?
Or if that answers your question?
Yes, ma'am.
Good.
Thank you.
Sure.
And our next question is from Lorna Valenzuela. Your line is now open.
Hi, my name is Lorna Valenzuela. I'm from San Francisco, California. I have been on dialysis for 9 years. My urinary bladder was hit by radiation when I was doing treatment for cervical cancer in Manila, Philippines. So when I came here, I was already 3.5 years on dialysis, and I had to start from zero to count back for my application for transplant. So right now I'm already 9 years, and I have been called now for a transplant, but I passed all the requirements, but I still have to undergo urology evaluation because my bladder, urinary bladder that was hit by radiation became smaller, and they are concerned about the backflow of the urine from the bladder to the new kidney. Yeah, so I just want to know if I have a chance of, you know, I'm still waiting for the appointment of the urology, and they told me I might have to do bladder training to catheterize myself. So I just want to know if I have to limit my intake of fluid just so that my urine wouldn't be too much a burden for my bladder. And are there any herbs or food that is not good for me for urinary retention?
What? Excuse me, are you asking about fluid limitations prior to transplant or after transplant?
After transplant.
Well, a lot of this is going to be based on whatever your urinary evaluation yields, and so I would have to defer any comments to the physician in that regard, because you will need to have ample fluid intake to make sure there's ample blood flow to that kidney to keep it healthy when you receive it, but you'll have to talk with your physicians about any consideration for your bladder, though.
Okay.
Okay. And as far as any foods, there really isn't any food that I would recommend one way or the other, but I would caution you on any use of herbal products, because some of them, after transplant especially, can interact with medications that you will need to take to keep that new kidney healthy.
Okay.
And also some of them may cause just problems with the new kidney in and of itself. So we're very cautious, and you need to talk with your team about any of these things that you're interested in after transplant.
Okay. And another thing is it advisable to use a pedometer when doing walking? Because here in San Francisco, it's always foggy and cool, or the temperature is low. So I don't know if I have to use some sunscreen or pedometer to measure the walking that you're doing, and what's the best time to do the exercise.
As far as the use of a pedometer, is useful for some patients because it gives them the motivation to do several more steps and try to increase their activity that way. It allows them to record from exercise session to exercise session how they're doing.
Okay.
It's important to know what type of pedometer you get, exactly how it works, because many people feel that their pedometers don't work, and the ones that I see of clients is because they didn't realize how to put it on correctly. So recognizing that one pedometer is not the same as another pedometer, and you need to know how that works to know where to place it on your belt. So I think pedometers are, you know, is a good motivational tool and a good way to document your progress.
Okay.
As far as sunscreen, I think it's always important to apply sunscreen when you're going to be outside, even on cloudy days. because you really do underestimate the exposure of the sun, and you may be very susceptible based on your medications and your medical history of being much more prone to sun exposure type of diseases, whether it's just simple sunburns as well as your increased risk of skin cancers.
Okay.
Huh?
So that's a good one.
Mm-hmm. And then the time of day really is going to depend on you. Obviously, if you have restrictions to be outside because of the sun, then do not exercise in that, you know, from that 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock period of time. Outside may not be the most appropriate time for you to exercise. You also have to think about the humidity, because humidity increases the burden on your system, your heart and lungs, if it's very hot when you're trying to exercise. But also think about what's the best time of the day for you. There are certain times of the day that you feel your best, and certain times of the week that you know you can commit to exercising at the same time on a weekly basis, that you'll know you'll be much more willing and able to follow through from week to week to exercise.
Okay.
And the last comment I have is just that if you, just to support what Janelle was telling you as far as your bladder issue, is if you get to the point and you consult the urologist and you have a plan and you go, whether you go on to transplant or not, once you have that evaluation, you can ask the question, is if they're going to refer you for bladder training, that may just not necessarily be how to catheterize yourself to relieve your bladder. There are therapists that specialize in women's health and issues like bladder control. That you can see to help you with that bladder training, and hopefully maybe potentially even be able to be more successful of bladder management.
Bladder management. Okay, that's good advice. So I really have to consult. Also, I have to ask them if I need a therapist for bladder control management.
Well, many physicians don't recognize that there's actually a division of physical therapists that specialize in women's health and bladder control. You can go to the American Physical Therapy Association and ask and search for a therapist in your area that does women's health.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one way that you can find that if you have somebody in your area that your physicians may not actually even know that exists. Because they're a very specialized group of people. And although if anybody will know, it'll probably be the urologist that will know if there's a clinical specialist out there working in women's health. The other area you can talk to is people that work in spinal cord injuries, because many individuals that have spinal cord injuries have issues of bladder control problems. And those therapists also might be able to be a resource for you. To find a clinical specialist that operates in women's health.
Women's health. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thanks a lot. That's a big help.
You're welcome.
And Chris, I'm going to talk to you about getting that link and some wording, and we'll put that on the NKF www.kidney.org website too, so people will be able to find how to find a physical therapist easily.
Mm-hmm.
Any more questions?
We do have two more questions currently.
All right, let's take these two questions and then we'll wrap up.
Okay. And our next one, it is from Eleanor Romero. Your line is now open.
Well, this is just a comment. I just had two donors and we weren't a match, and it was very disappointing. But I wanted to recommend anybody that is going through kidney problems to read the autobiography by Kojo. It hits the spot.
I read it, and I enjoyed it very much.
And I think I cried through the whole book, but I just wanted to make that comment.
There is a book review. We do have a book review section on the www.kidney.org website,
oh,
and there is a book review. It's called, I think it's called The Fashionista. I think that's the name of it.
Uh-huh.
But he's a, if you don't know him, he's a, what is he? Like a fashion person.
Right.
Yeah, that had a transplant. So thank you for that comment. Appreciate it.
Okay, and thank you for your time.
Sure.
And our next question is from Marilyn Sharp. Your line is now open.
Thank you. I have a question for Andrew. I wonder how long it took him to get strength and stamina back after the operation and when he was able to return to work.
I'm self-employed, so I was pretty much back to work, I want to say 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
But I'm able to do most of the stuff, you know, just give me a laptop and a phone and a fax machine and I can do stuff. I didn't really, you know, go out and have any meetings with clients or anything like that, you know, for 6 weeks maybe.
Okay.
Stamina. I felt so much better after having the transplant. I mean, just, you know, I wasn't doing much, but, I don't know. That's a good question. I'd have to really sit and think about how long it took me to, I started everything just really slowly after I did it, but, I mean, it was still 2 years before I really got serious about doing anything, you know, last summer. So,
2 years before what?
It was 2 years after the transplant, really, before I was doing anything. I just wasn't, I guess, properly motivated to go out and do anything.
And it also has something to do with your underlying condition and how long you were sick before in terms of your recovery.
Right.
People are different, and some of it is, you know, getting the proper help, realizing sometimes you can't do it alone. You need some help from your transplant team or other recipients or family to encourage and help you.
Thank you very much.
Sure. These are some great questions we had today. And you can still email us at coffeehouse@kidney.org if more things come up, as well as go to our message board. And I'm going to really, truly, from the bottom of our hearts, on behalf of all the panelists, I want to thank you all for joining us today for this conversation, and I want to thank the panelists for their time and energy and dedication. And if you will all stay on the line just for a minute or so to take a quick poll, and any last parting thoughts from our panelists?
As far as, this is Chris, as far as I'm concerned, I think the biggest step in regaining and restoring your health is getting started. You know, making that commitment to yourself that it's something you want to do and set your goals and go after it. Find the resources and the people that can help you, that are interested in you, find the family support, and just get going, whether it's improving your nutrition, being more active within your family or community, regaining your strength, preparing yourself for a transplant.
And if you need something to look forward to, the U.S. Transplant Games can be a very empowering experience.
Those are, they're one of the highlights of the things I do professionally do. I enjoy going to those so much and seeing the energy and how each other empowers each other, the amount of love that goes on there. It's just incredible, and you do not need to be an athlete to be there. It's really about embracing life and the gift that was given.
Thank you, Chris, and everybody. Operator, can we move on to the poll?
Yes. Please stand by for one moment, and we will begin the polling session of today's call. One moment, please. Thank you for standing by. At this time, we are ready to begin the polling session of today's conference. It'll be one moment while we get this started. Our first question for today is, did you gain a better understanding of the topic? Please press *1 for yes and *2 for no. Once again, the question is, did you gain a better understanding of the topic? Star 1 for yes and star 2 for no. And we'll pause for one moment to get the results. Okay, thank you. And we will go on to the next question. And our second question for today's call is, did you understand each panelist's presentation? That is star 1 for yes and star 2 for no. Once again, the question is, did you understand each panelist's presentation? Star 1 for yes and star 2 for no. Question 3 for today is, was the call the right amount of time? That is star 1 for yes, star 2 for no. Once again, question is, was the call the right amount of time? Star 1 for yes, star 2 for no. Question 4 is, will you tell others to join Coffee House Conversations telephone calls? Star 1 for yes, star 2 for no. Once again, question is, will you tell others to join Coffee House Conversations telephone calls? That's star 1 for yes and star 2 for no. And our final question for today's polling is, was the information personally helpful to you? And that is star 1 for yes and star 2 for no. Once again, was the information personally helpful to you? Star 1 for yes and star 2 for no. And thank you, everyone. That does conclude today's conference call. You may disconnect at this time.